Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Hello, Ange. How are you?
Hello, David. Good to see you again. How are things in Canada?
Canada is lovely. We are on Vancouver Island at the moment, which is over on the west coast of British Columbia. People think of islands, I know I do, as small places, but Vancouver Island is 600 kilometres long and 300 kilometres wide. So it's quite a large island. But we've been here for just over a week. We also spent a little time on Salt Spring Island, which is one of the Gulf Islands that sits between here and the mainland, and having a lovely time. And the weather is very different here, more like the UK, so no snow.
Well, again, we've had four seasons in one day. I left the house, beautiful sunshine, got to college in Portobello Road, and literally entered the building and the heavens opened. Over the past 4 hours, we've had hailstones, thunder, lightning.
Oh, God.
And a beautiful double rainbow in the sky.
That's madness.
It's absolute madness. But it's, on the whole, it's been really mild this week. So everyone's smiling. Things are blooming. My neighbour's magnolia is looking magnificent. So yeah, it's all good.
Fab. So how is college going?
College is going really well. I had a brilliant day today because I've been working on one of my first ever gold pieces. I've made a few gold commissions, but nothing specifically for myself to my own designs, not many anyway. So as part of the collection for the scholarship, I've designed a pair of earrings, and they're going to be asymmetric 14 karat gold earrings.
Nice.
And today was D-Day. After a lot of polishing, I had to solder the post onto a little section that I'd added onto the back of this earring so that the post would be nice and secure. So you can imagine gold and soldering. But having done the sort of soldering masterclass, which I keep raving about, I was just so much more confident going into it.
Right.
And I'm really chuffed with my earring. So yeah, I'm actually wearing it now just to sort of, I don't know if you can see
it. Yes, I can. That looks gorgeous.
Yes, and they're going to be asymmetrical. So the other one is going to have a sapphire set in it. Oh no!
Ooh.
Yep. So that's to come. As well as working on making gold, I've been wax carving my settings for the gemstones that I had commissioned, because they're all very free-form geometric shapes. And it would have been quite a challenge to actually make mounts for these stones. So I decided to go via the wax carving route. So I've been making the settings, which I'm then going to have cast in 14 karat gold, then solder them to the earring, and then hopefully, fingers crossed, set them myself.
Excellent. I know you'll be able to do that. No problem at all.
Yeah, no problem. I love a challenge. But yeah, I definitely do want to have a go at setting them myself, because one of the other courses I've been doing at Morley is stone setting, and setting stones of different shapes into mounts and cutting the seats with a graver. So it's all very new and very technical. But because I've been learning the skills, I feel like I need to push myself and actually do the setting myself, as opposed to sending it off to a professional who'll probably do it in 10 minutes. But yeah, so that's my next challenge. And then tomorrow, I'm really excited because, again, as part of my scholarship, I'm doing a score fold forming course at Morley with Paul Wells, who is metal. And yes, I'm really excited because I've recently bought Paul's new book, which has come out. And I think the ACJ, they had a lovely launch evening, which I wasn't able to go to. I think Paul and Anna were having a signing. So, yep, I'm doing a workshop with Paul tomorrow. So I'll probably give you more details of that at the end. So that's been my week.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's really lovely to see Paul's book. I've not bought a copy, but I've kind of seen bits of it online. And he's just one of the most amazing form folders, isn't he? His work just blows me away. You know, quite how he does it, I don't know. But one day I'll get round to finding out.
I have done Paul's courses before, and so I know a bit about what we'll be doing tomorrow, but I'm excited to actually, you know, learn some new techniques. So yeah, definitely when we chat next time, I might even have something to show you.
Brilliant. That would be fantastic. That's really good. So you are just storming through what you're doing in Morley then. It seems to be really kind of whizzing through for you now.
Yeah, I can't believe next term will be the final term of the scholarship. So I've sort of just got to decide over half term, which is next week, which courses I want to do for the final term. Probably more of the same, although I will be adding an amount making course, which will be great. So literally making my settings from the metal as opposed to making them from wax and then learning how to stones into those settings. But it's been such a brilliant experience. It's really helped me push my, not only my making skills, but certainly my designing skills. I feel much more comfortable not just drawing, but planning how to develop those drawings into not one piece, but more than one piece and potentially collections. So it's just got me thinking in a different way. And certainly I will be adding gold into my work from now on, because I feel like it is as I've, from talking to you before, you remember you telling me, oh, you know, it's a really lovely metal, it's nice and soft and easy to work with, and it is, it's great. It's that fear of, you know, the soldering that I get a bit apprehensive with, because you think, oh my god, I'm going to melt this thing. But one of my tutors today, she, before I sort of prepped myself for soldering on this 18 karat gold post, she said, it's a bit like walking on a wall. You know you can walk, but you could fall off the wall. That's a really good analogy. Just as you've walked on the ground before, it's fine. You know how to walk. It's just walking slower on somewhere unfamiliar. You can do it.
Love it.
You've worked in gold before, David, haven't you?
I have worked in gold before. Yeah, I worked in gold, obviously, on all the glitters, because we had to do it there. And funnily enough, I was thinking about a piece that I need to finish when I get back to the UK, which is a brooch based on my air collection. And it's silver and gold. And there's one very fine piece of silver that I need to solder to a 9-carat setting for a cabochon gem to go into. And I was thinking, I mean, at the moment, the silver is carved in wax. I was just kind of thinking about it, whether I need to make it a bit thicker. Do I need to just slightly, you know, increase the volume of the silver? Because I don't want to kind of like start soldering it. And this tiny bit of silver suddenly and shrink back. God, then what you'd do, you know. So I was rethinking that one. My head was going to, you know, at some stupid o'clock in the morning for some reason, thinking about soldering.
Are you missing jewellery making? Could that be why? Because you haven't really done it for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I was with my friend Steve, who is an amazing potter. And we were staying with Steve and Perry down in Souk, which is near Victoria, on the bottom of Vancouver Island. And he took me to this place where you can get just about anything to do with any craft. Yeah, we went to this place called, I think it was Michael's. And it's got all stuff. It's simply, if you want to get a rabbit shape and paint it for Easter, you can get something like that. But we were just going around the whole thing, because as well as a potter, he crochets and he gets a lot of his wool there. But we came to this bit, which was cake decorating, and they had loads of silicone molds. And one of them just totally caught my eye, because going back to when we were in Palm Springs in December, just before New Year, I picked up a book on concrete blocks, which fascinated me. And there were lots of design ideas that came from that. This silicone mold for your cake had a repeating pattern in it that was really akin to the mid-century modern aesthetic. And I was thinking, I could do, you know, I mean, I don't know whether it's silicon that can take metal, so it might not take hot metal, but I could cast wax into it and then cut shapes from it. So I was very tempted to buy a piece, and then remembered I didn't have my cards on me. Chris had them because he was off shopping somewhere else. So I didn't buy it, but there are lots of these places in Canada, so we might find another one and I'll go and get it. I just really liked the pattern. It was one of those very typical patterns of the kind of 50s, 60s period that you might have seen on wallpaper or just in a variety of different places. And I thought, I don't quite know how I'm going to use it, but I feel I want to have the opportunity of doing something with it.
So because you're not actually making anything at the moment, do you still sketch or draw? Because I know you're great at that. I've seen your sketchbooks and things. Is that something that you do to sort of keep your hand in whilst you're away?
Funny, because I had determined that I was going to do a lot of sketching and a lot of rendering. I didn't expect to be doing it in the Okanagan because I knew I was going to be at the Vernon Community Arts Centre and doing lots of stained glass. But I thought, well, I'm going to have loads of time in the Kootenays because I don't seem to be able to make any connections there creatively. And I mean, in the end, I did because I met Samonti, which was fantastic. But I really haven't got into it. I know that I don't just sit down and want to sketch. There has to be something that I want to sketch. And when I picked up that book on the concrete blocks, that set me off on that sketching. And I did lots of sketching around that with lots of ideas, none of which had to be formulated into anything. But since then, I haven't felt the drive to pick it up and move forward with it. And I certainly haven't felt the drive to do any rendering, even though I brought everything with me and, you know, created a nice little kit that, you know, went into the suitcase, didn't take up too much space. So no, I haven't really been doing it. But that said, we did go to a gem and rock show in Victoria last Sunday. Now, we found out about this because Pat Doyle, who is the glass technician at Vernon Community Arts Centre, has a friend who she helps out at these events. And she said, oh, we're going to be down in Victoria on the island, then in Vancouver. These are the dates, you know, if you're down there at the time. And we were. So we made a point of going to this place to see her and say hi. And it was really interesting to go around one of these fairs here as opposed to the ones that I tend to go to back home. A similar selection of gemstones, I suppose. There was, I would say, 50% it was gems that had been cut into wands and heart shapes and dolphins and other kind of, you know, sculptural forms. Lots of beads, but then a lot of the opalescent gemstones, jaspers, the agates, rhyolite, things like this that you could buy in slabs. It's about 5 to 7 mil thick, and then you can cut it up to cut your own gems. And that was really interesting. And there were some gemstones that I'd never heard of. And again, I was kind of tempted to buy some of these and bring them back because, mind you, we're already overweight on our suitcases anyway. In the end, I didn't. There were lots of things that I could have had, but I thought, well, I don't know when I'm going to get time to do it. I've probably got about 300 different gems back at home anyway. You know all the bloody boxes of gems I've got waiting for something to be done with them. So is this time to be buying more? Probably not. So there was the
gems that you said you'd not seen before. Were they native to Canada? Is that why they were ones that you'd not come across, or?
There were a couple. One was called Victoria Stone, and it was in natural state, it's kind of grey, but it has a chatoyance to it, the way that labradorite, for example, does. And they had some that they had dyed as well, so that the dye had been forced under pressure into the gem. And it was really interesting, but I didn't like it in the grey, and I didn't want a dyed gem. So in the end, I didn't buy any, but I was, you know, humming and hiring. There were some nice pieces of lapis that had amazing veining in them, the veining being pyrite. And I was kind of tempted by those. And I thought, you know, when am I going to use it? There's so many other things I, in theory, want to use because I bought them already and haven't got round to, that in the end, I didn't. There was a lovely oval teardrop cut rutilated quartz, which was probably about 30 mil by 15, 17, something like that. Beautifully cut, lots of black rutilations in it. And I thought, do I want this now? And to be honest, the answer came back no. So it was really lovely to go around. Interesting to see gems that I wouldn't have seen possibly in the UK. And it was fun to reflect on what do I want now in the way of gems moving forward. Do I simply want the things that I've got? Am I, you know, being an even bigger magpie than usual and kind of bringing stuff back from here? So that was Sunday. On Tuesday, we are walking on the beach with Steve, just around the corner in Souk, and he's something of a rock hound himself. And he picks up this piece and said, oh, here you go. Here's a piece of jade. Because there is jade in British Columbia. It's a different coloured jade. You get a black jade and kind of greeny jade. And he said, right, here we are. Take it home, do something with it. So I ended up with a piece of BC jade, which I can, you know, cut and cab to my heart's desire when I get home.
That's lovely. And that's more personal because, you know, you found it somewhere that you'll have memories with someone that you know. That's, yeah, rather than just buying something, as you say, for the sake of buying it.
I kind of been keeping my hand in with not making or designing, but definitely on to Instagram, seeing what people are doing, commenting, putting up some posts now and again of stuff that I've done before, which is, you know, in my thoughts at the time. Like I did this little Koroit boulder oval some time ago, and I was talking to some ladies who are fellow potters with Steve and Sue. And they were asking, you know, are you a potter? And I said, no, I make jewelry and this is what I do. And they were fascinated by all the different gems and things. So I thought, well, this is a gem I really enjoyed doing. And I love working on boulder opals because you don't know what you're going to find when you actually get to the colour bar. And so I thought, oh, I'll just put that up as a little reminder for me of how much fun I had, you know, finding this.
Yeah, that's great. Because I think as makers, we're not, you know, yes, we make, but we're designing when we're out and about and looking at things. And so you get inspiration from different places. We don't always have to be doing the thing we love to actually get to that end point. It's stages, isn't it, of creativity?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, I've been enjoying just in the last day or two, we've been walking around in the countryside here, which is not old growth, but second growth forest. So it's still very old. And it's mostly coniferous. There is some deciduous on the island as well. But there's lots of water, and there's lots of water in the air in the area that we were in yesterday. So you've got this huge amount of sphagnum moss just covering all the trees. And these amazing soft shapes that are something extra to the shape of the tree itself. Just fascinating. I was kind of like mind-boggling, like what can I do with these shapes? And photographing this and photographing that. And then there was an amazing piece of moss that I'd never seen before that almost looked like it was a fishtail. And so there were lots of things that I've captured that will at some point lead me on to, you know, to creating something.
So you have documented your, you know, you said you're not sketching, but to me, taking photos is like sketching in some ways. And that's how I've relied on designing. But you know, you are obviously capturing what you see on your camera or on your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back to Palm Springs again, we did a tour of some of the famous houses, again, from the mid-century modern that were built there, and I took loads of photos of there, because there would be an element on that house facade or down the side or the roof line or something that I know will take me on to creating something, possibly allied now with this cake mold that I found in Souk. You know, here's the shape and here's the finish type of thing. You know, what finish did I want on that? This is the finish I wanted on that. So it'd be interesting to, you know, just see what I can do with it.
Well, that sounds great. Can't wait to see that. Can't wait for you to get back and start making.
Yeah, well, you'll have to come down to the studio, won't you?
Oh, again? Yeah, definitely. We've got a date. Even though you don't know it, we've got a date.
Excellent.
So when is your return? It can't be long now.
No, it's not. We leave the island on the 31st and go back to Vancouver. We're in Vancouver until the 2nd of April. We fly down to LA to spend a few days with my sister again, where we started, and then fly out of LAX on the 5th of April. So returning on the 6th.
Are you looking forward to coming back? How are you feeling about it?
It's interesting. We came out here with two questions, which was, do we want to move to Canada? And if we do, of the two options that will get us here, the West Kootenays or the Okanagan, you know, which of those is going to be the one that we feel is ideal? We've answered the question, yes, definitely we would like to move to Canada. And we think we have answered the question as to the area, i.e. we think it's going to be the Okanagan rather than the Kootenays, because the Okanagan is more accessible physically, it's easier to get in and out of all year than the Kootenays are. And we just had such an amazing reception from the people that we met in the Okanagan. It's not that the people in the Kootenays weren't lovely, but just about everywhere else in the world was blown out of the water by the reception and the unexpected friendliness that we received in the Okanagan. It was just on another level. We were thinking when we move to a new country, it's good to have community around you who can support you. And it's not that we wouldn't have it in the Kootenays, because we met some lovely people there as well. But the ones in the Okanagan were just on a different level. So we suspect we will end up moving to the Okanagan, subject to getting a job there. And the other thing that we've determined is that even though Krish had this wonderful job opportunity with Fluffy, which I think we talked about before, and they're really keen to have him there, it does feel like the best way for us to actually access this is for me to take a job somewhere and in the Okanagan, because it enables him to carry on with his coaching business, which is, to say the least, very lucrative and very much where he wants to go. It doesn't box him in. I can do the job, whatever the job may be, but I can still do my jury on the side. It's not that, you know, I have to give up, and I can really focus on what it is that I want to create and upskill by actually using that time more effectively. Because I love having all the time that I want to work in the barn and do a bit of teaching, et cetera, but I know I don't use it as effectively as I could, because the time is not exactly endless, but it's very bountiful. I know if I can work really well when I give myself borders, what is it that I want to create? Stick within that. What can I do in that time as well? All right, I don't need to, you know, this is 3 hours. I need to get something finished in 3 hours. It's not that. It's that okay, so I only have limited time. So really focus on what I want to create rather than I fancy doing a bit of that. Oh, well, I know I fancy doing a bit of that. And oh, I could do some of that, you know, but no, okay. Stick to it. Find a plan. What really, really excites me? What do I need that I don't have in the way of skills to achieve that? So go and then get the skills, and then put the two together and really get into creating something that I love. Because one thing that I have realized this year is when I look back at all the achievements I've got since winning the Takumi Metal Prize in 2021, all the pieces that have been selected for these exhibitions, etc., that I have taken part in, from New York Jury Week to the ones that come through Biafrin, funnily enough, who are based in Canada, Laguna Beach down in LA, they've all been for the most outrageous, shall we say, pieces of jewelry that I've made. So it seems to be saying that's where I need to go. That's where my creativity really needs to be concentrated when I have limited time.
No, and I think that's probably why I gel with you as a jewelry maker, but I see you as a jewelry artist, and that's what I call myself. And it took me a while to get there, because first of all, calling myself a jewelry anything, I felt like a bit of a fraud, an imposter, because I didn't necessarily have the training. But I think the way you and I approach jewelry making is quite different to how, you know, lots of other more conventionally trained or people that do fine jewelry make jewelry. And that's how I've seen your work, and that's what I love, that connection with art history, architecture, and you know the type of architecture you love, and you know what excites you, and I can see that in your work. And definitely those are the pieces of yours that get me most excited, so yeah.
Thank you. Well, we both have a similar aesthetic, which is lovely. And I think that's exceptional, in that I was very lucky to be asked, as I know you had, onto the Jewelers Academy podcast. Jess asked, you know, what advice would you give a jeweler who's starting out? And I said, you know, don't worry about how you're going to make it. Come up with what you really want to make. Do lots of sketching, you know, and actually it doesn't need to look fantastic when you're sketching, but do something that really tells you what it is you want to make, rather than just making a ring so you can understand a technique. That way you can really start to become you, and your jewelry can be a part of you, rather than creating stuff which is similar to everybody else, just so you understand the technique. Learn the technique once you need to learn it, but start by being creative and get that, what is it that you need to get out of you, into jewelry.
I totally agree. And actually, that's one of the things that I'm finding most exciting about doing the scholarship, because as part of it, I have to come up with a collection. So that's been what I've been working on for the whole year. And I think people will be quite, probably a bit surprised. It'd be very Marmite. Some people will love it, some will hate it, but it's very much what's been inside me and wanting to get out for ages. And as you say, I've looked at it and thought, God, how the heck am I going to make this? So much of this year has been trying to figure out how to make this madness into wearable jewelry. But it's been so much fun. I've absolutely loved it. And it's kind of made me not fear designing stuff that I like because I don't think anyone will want to buy it. I don't care. I just, you know, I've got such a buzz out of it. And it's that old thing. I think you'll always find your tribe. There'll always be people that love what you do and those that hate what you do. And I think the ones that love what you do will find you. But until then, enjoy the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about journeys, we've been yakking away as usual regard to the time. So we need to start talking about who we are going to recommend this time that people should look at on Instagram.
Well, I'm definitely going to go for my lovely tutor and wonderful metalsmith, Paul Wells Metal. So that is Paul Wells Metal, all one word. And I'll, as I said at the start, I'll be doing a score fold forming course with Paul tomorrow. And his wonderful book has just come out with different metal forming techniques. So yeah, definitely give him a follow.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you put me onto Paul many moons ago when we soon after we met, as we were talking about fold forming, because obviously it was Charles Luton Brain, his work got me into making jewelry. And then I was lucky enough to meet Anastasia Young, his partner, when we were down in Devon, I think it was, yeah, Devon, last year at the ACJ conference. So yeah, I mean, I would second that automatically. His work is amazing and can lead you onto so many different things, because I mean, your fold forming is glorious as well. I mean, some of the bangles you've made, fold formed, just out of this world.
Paul started my addiction with fold forming. He was one of the first tutors at Morley that I signed up with, and that was probably 8 years ago. And yeah, sort of, he has created the hammer monster that I am today.
Hello, hammer monster. I'll have to say that next time.
I know that. On a t-shirt.
Yes, you will.
Well, who are you recommending today, Mr. Lilly?
Well, I'm going to recommend Danica Design Studio. The Danica Design Studio is probably known to a few jewelers because they do the Battle of the Rings every year. They are a design studio in their own right, but they do this. I always forget to take part, but this year I have remembered to do an entry. And today we're talking about the 24th of March is the final day for entries. So if you're listening now, you've missed it, because this isn't coming out the 24th of March. But more interestingly, the actual battle, the competition, starts on the 1st and runs to the 31st of May. So you've got time to start following Danica. And I love how the whole thing's set up, in that, you know, they put two rings up a day and you vote for this one or that one. It's always on their stories. Each day,
Danica Design.
Yeah, Danica, D-A-N-A-C-A Design Studio. That's their Instagram handle as well. At the end, there is one winner, and the winner gets, I think it's a $500 cash prize as well. And all the rings that are entered are up for sale, so people can who see them can buy them during the actual battle as well, which is kind of fun. If you're an artist, you get notified on the 29th of March. So I keep my fingers crossed that the ring that I have entered will be selected this year. And then, yeah, the show starts on the 1st of May and runs to the end of May. So Danica Design Studio is my recommendation for this podcast.
Good stuff. So I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing you in the flesh soon. I'm sure we'll chat before then. But until then, wishing you a lovely remainder of your trip.
Thank you very much. I will see you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track of Toki, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.